in perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct, right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Walcott.
A Viking is born at a time.
He gets inside,
in any weather you can see a swinging ring. Listening head and skin, you know, we're behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we're back, finally.
It's been a break. But Nick, there's one thing I learned this week after watching the second game, coincidentally after we beat Hawthorn, is, you know, this has been the dark and long summer of discontent for me. But on Monday, I actually made an effort, and researching this show, I went and listened to Brendan Laird's last two media interviews to hope to glean any tidbits of information. Now, as an information gathering exercise, it was a complete failure. Brendan Laird is well ahead of his, you know, he's already sort of gives away as little information in press conferences as a head coach would after 5 years in the job. So he's very polished at giving nothing. But the point was, I had enough enthusiasm for football that I was listening to coaches' interviews again.
And I think that's an important step in your recovery, because it hasn't been an easy off-season. And, you know, I know that there's been, we've talked about, you know, whether or not we can bear to watch the North Melbourne game again. And, you know, frankly, I've come out at, no, I don't want to watch that game ever again in my life.
I was speaking to a couple of knowledgeable Richmond supporters on Twitter, and one of them went back and watched the game recently, and he was saying how much it ripped his heart out. There's certainly a significant proportion of the hardcore Richmond supporting community that is in some intensive therapy right now. But I at least feel, for the first time in a long time, I'm on the way back.
I know, and the way back is the same that it's always been. You know, country ovals, ragtag collections of footballers never to be repeated. It's pre-season football, and it has a certain charm.
False hope that a seven-year player can somehow make an exponential improvement in play and will be the key to our midfield slash back slash forwards this year.
Oh, no, I wanted to talk about Andrew Moore later.
Well, there's more than one category in the false hope. The preseason hope, not false, preseason hope category.
Well, should we start with that, or was there some
I think
big
absolutely
picture you wanted to talk? So
I think we should. We've beaten Hawthorn again, and it's time to get, you know, let's not bury the lead. What have we learned in the preseason?
Well, I think we've learned a bit. The result against Fremantle, you know, pretty predictable, and, you know, missing eight of our top 10 players from the best and fairest, our best tall defender, our best medium defender, our best small defender, our best three midfielders, our best ruck, our best tall forward, and our best medium forward. So, you know, it probably wasn't likely to turn out well, and it didn't. The Hawthorn game, again, we were closer to full strength than they were, but they weren't that far off it. They still had 12 premiership players, and seeing Jack dominate against Frawley and Gibson, yeah, that still made me feel pretty good. But really, it was the new faces that I think we have to start. And so, should we talk about Chole, or should we talk about Rioli?
Rioli, I think, is the most interesting when you're talking true substance.
Yep.
So it's interesting. I'm with
that poster behind was the most exciting behind I think I've ever seen, at least since Joe's days.
Yeah. And of course, he looked good in the first game. I mean, the fact that you could use his legs as toothpicks is still somewhat concerned of his ability to play senior football, but there's certainly something there. There's a flash there. I'm not sure that we've really learned anything of substance. What we've learned is he's going to have a few highlights in the VFL, What we don't know if he's got the body and the substance to stand up to, will he ever put enough muscle on his frame to stand up to the rigors of playing sort of second right forward in the AFL. But he's certainly made a promising start, and as he's clearly impressed the coaching staff. Brendan Laid is effusive when he talks about his, you know, he's a total package athletically.
I know. Well, and he is. What I enjoyed about that behind, not least, was when he turned around, saw who was chasing him, and I checked, and they're both they're Litherhand and Brand, who are young Hawk players who both have a reputation as being reasonably quick. He looked at them and said, "I'm taking you on."
Yeah, well, you know, he probably had the bounce. Known almost anyone on the Hawthorn roster anyway, but you know, he packed himself in.
Yeah, I like it. You know that he is a pretty unique player. I mean, the bucket of cold water is that he hasn't been particularly productive even at junior level. Although he had a decent under 18 carnival, but you can see that there's a bit to work with, and particularly with Vickery and Griffiths out injured. No, it certainly was fun.
And it's very gracious of you to be so complimentary about the person who appears to be taking McBean's spot in the preseason team.
I know. I'm not happy about that, but let's
stick to the positives to start with.
Agreed.
Really.
So I really liked the Sheds and Rioli playing together. Like, they just seem to read each other's play. There was just a movement and a athleticism. Like I thought, one of my notes from the Frio game was that having a loose ball on the half forward line and having Lennon and Lloyd run towards it, they did look a bit ponderous. Whereas I thought that the best part of the Hawks game in terms of our forward line was that while Jack was marking everything, otherwise we were generating a ton of goals from loose ball gets in the forward line, which isn't normally a strength, but on Saturday it was, and it was really good fun.
So, and I know some of a few sort of good pundits on the internet are saying a similar thing. I was not significantly whelmed by Rioli's draft pick, and was a bit anxious about his low production in juniors, and the Frio game certainly didn't allay any of those fears. He was very unproductive in what was a considerable amount of game time. But was sort of
the one thing I liked about the Frio game was that he wasn't getting shrugged quite as badly in the tackles as I feared.
But the thing I've learned in the second game and reading the prospectus is he was actually a very good pressure player in juniors. He was first in the carnival for pressure acts. And so that's real production, just not the traditional disposal numbers. And you could see it against Hawthorn. He is around the contest a lot. Now, he does get shrugged sometimes, not as much as you say as you'd expect. But he's in there, he's busy, and he's in good position. And the other good thing that we saw, aside from the fact his offensive production was just respectable enough, was that he's so quick. You can see that. You can see like his cousin's ability to move, to create separation, to think quicker, to react in an agile way quicker than the other players do around him. So you could see it. You could see him as an AFL player getting some games this year. After the Hawthorn game, like I can mentally picture it. So from that perspective, I'm quite pleased.
Me too, actually. And I wasn't expecting that. I was actually expecting him to look a little bit further away. Admittedly, we were miles on top against Hawthorn, and you always look good, better in a winning side. But there was a lot to work with there.
Well, I liked a few times you could see, even early in the game, he'd get separation on his opponent and he had time to sort of tap the ball and pick it up and you know, sort of do those special little things that most of our small forwards can't do because they don't get separation. Which is, in fairness, very hard to get for most AFL players. But he has that elite level athleticism that he does get. He does get that extra meter of space, and he's got nice little hands and tight too. He's a decent contested ball player, which I know some people have said that, you know, he could one day play in the midfield, which it will require a fair bit of bulk, but it's not impossible.
Honestly, after the first game, I wasn't convinced that he was miles ahead of Jaden Short. He had a pretty decent game after, you know, mildly disappointing first season. But, yeah, no, I came around after the second game.
So, Nick, another player that sort of has positively impressed me, because I think maybe last year his output was slightly overrated because he kicked one magnificent goal, was Connor Manidou. And he's looked really solid in the preseason to me. He looks like a starting 22 player, which I think by no means would guarantee the start of preseason, but he covers space. He went at 100% disposal efficiency, kicked two goals on the weekend, took a contested mark. You know, he's just doing a lot and had a key sort of hardball get in the defensive goal square and hand passed it out nicely. He's just doing the right things over and over again, and he covers space well. I just think that screams good flanker, good wingman in modern AFL.
Yeah, well, he's a monster athlete in terms of his running ability, in that he's got a ton of endurance and he's really quick. And so, you know, the potential's there. It's what was impressive for me, particularly the Hawthorn game, but a little bit in the first one. He's still learning when to run off, when to track back, but he's definitely made progress, and the contested marking was better than I expected, actually. I was genuinely impressed by that.
Yeah, I think overall very promising preseason and has earned his round one spot, knock on wood, barring injury. Your thoughts on Townsend?
Townsend's tough. I mean, as you put on Twitter, he's tackled like a machine in the first two games. What I'm not certain about is whether, you know, one of the problems with Dan Jackson was that we weren't particularly good centre clearance team when he was in the centre bounce, even though he was our best defensive midfielder. And I almost wonder if there's a little bit some of that with Townsend as well, because it was about the only aspect of the game we didn't dominate against Hawthorn, because, yeah, he doesn't win a lot of ball, but he does crack in really hard. And I enjoy having him around for seeing opposition players disappear in a pile of Richmond bodies. But, yeah, needs to win more football.
Yeah, so at the start of the preseason, the working thesis I had was he's a Matt Thomas replacement and may or may not be better than Matt Thomas.
Yep.
I'm leaning now towards, and it's easy to speak ill of the dead, but actually leaning toward now that he is better than Matt Thomas. You know, his disposal numbers, they're frankly too low, and there's no getting around that. But he's okay in tight. He's actually got nice hands when he gets the ball, which Matt Thomas didn't have. He was a bit clumsy. And, God, he smacks in. He really is a player that, and he's got, he puts on sort of, he commits retribution justice with his violence. Like he's quite
yeah, which I enjoy. I really do enjoy that.
Yeah, I think he's going to play round one. I just think he's.
I think one of either him or Moore is going to play round one, and I'm not.
Well, that's the thing.
I'm not certain which one.
I'm more Townsend now. There's one game to go, but like I see what Townsend brings that we don't have already. Moore is more a Petar type, that he's a bit of utility, not really great at anything. You might play him when you've got another option, but
he cracks in pretty hard as well. I enjoyed him crunching bodies, and he's a bigger 190 centimeter mid that we haven't had. I just thought, you know, in terms of that ball-winning issue that he was a little bit better at it. Yeah, I don't know. There's not a lot between them, but it's I had sort of mentally assumed that Townsend was ahead of Moore, and I'm not so certain about that right now.
Okay, I'm actually more the other way. I would have started them equal, and maybe it's just because it's different when you sit down to a 22. But I see something Townsend brings a unique quality, whereas I see Moore as being too like other players that. Admittedly, we don't have other big mids, but he's sort of got to beat out Sean Greig or something like that, and he's just not going to. What did you think of Conker's preseason?
I really liked his game against Freo, and actually in both games I've liked how well he's moved around the ground. Still some issues with his kicking, but he does, you know, it's the cliched best shape of his life, but I actually do think for once he is in the best shape of his life.
I think you're right, and I tweeted this after the first game. I think I agree. I think he's covering more ground than he has in the past. And that was, I've sort of just by the eye test, I've seen that in both games. I've given up on his kicking, and it was sort of something I'd come to even before I read in the prospect that the stats on his kicking are quite bad. But I see him now in the Taylor Hunt, sort of halfway between Taylor Hunt and Sean Greig as a player. He's in the first life, but I've just given up on the idea of, I would love to be here making a, and you know, it's a contrarian argument to talk up Rhys Conker before the season amongst Richmond supporters, and I'd love to be making that argument, but I'm just not at the point I can do it. He's in the best shape of his life, and he still makes horrendous kicking errors. I'm not on the, credit to him for getting fit, but I see him as a 20 to 25 player.
I think he's in the best 22 right now. He did have good stats going inside 50 a couple of years ago, but yeah, it's just this. Yeah, his technique, particularly on some short passes, can just get really sloppy. Which is a great disappointment. I've been a fan of his for a long time, and I like, you know, he does. He's one of these guys who's an instinctive inside athlete with, you know, he's got a sidestep, and good agility and close. So, you know, I've always held out hope of what he could be, but yeah, it's, the dream is certainly fading.
I will say credit to the coaches. Certainly won't say this about their development of all players, but they have given Conker every chance. Like, they let him kick out as a way to build his sort of confidence in his kicking, and you know, it's not a bad way to use, because what he's good at kicking is when he kicks well, he's good at depth. You know, he's quite clever at finding the spaces in between. Admittedly, he didn't do that on the weekend when he kicked over Hawley's head, but you know, when he's at his best, so it's a good way to try and use his best attribute and build confidence. But yeah, I don't think he's repaid the coach's faith personally. Anyway, we'll see. Interesting update about Yaron.
Yeah, it hasn't got much coverage in the media, but what they were saying on the coverage, that he's going to be back a fair bit sooner than had been expected, which, you know, frankly is good news.
Yeah, absolutely. It was sort of a backhander saying, one of the commentators said, well, he didn't come into training into good shape, but people should lay off him because it's a long-term game. Well, actually, no, they should lay off Dan Richardson for that, but they shouldn't lay off a professional AFL athlete if he really did come into training out of shape. I don't know the ins and outs of that, but just the way the commentators presented it didn't make you sympathetic towards Yaron at all. But the overall point they were trying to make is true, that it's more important that he's fit in round 20 than round 1.
No. Look, I've heard of a few Carlton players arriving at other clubs, and those clubs being shocked at the level of fitness at what they're receiving.
I will say this, there was interesting in the prospectus that even last year he was still an elite kick out of halfback, which made me very happy to hear.
I know, that it's that combination of speed and elite long kicking. Yeah, I like it. Nathan Broad, what did you think?
Sort of got beat up a bit, I thought.
I don't think he should be allowed to play as a key defender. Like he got monstered a number of times, and by guys like Tabana, who are good but not great.
Yeah, so I mean, he did enough to get the commentator started noticing him. He got the ball late, and you know, didn't have his colours completely lowered. But yeah, you know, the dream is you replace Jade Batchelor with someone who can actually get the ball. But you know, Jade Batchelor still, he does things on the defensive end that I don't think Broad's anywhere near doing this year.
No, and that was actually something from the prospectus that. While Batchelor doesn't give you much in terms of intercept possessions, he's a very good one-on-one defender, and so if he can't do that role, then that's sort of a good thing about Batchelor, is that where needed he can switch on to a big forward and not get embarrassed. Whereas I think Broad is instead having to compete for the Grimes role. Now, having depth for Grimes, given his injury history, isn't a bad thing, but on Saturday, he looked really good. And right now, I think there's no spot for Broad in the 22.
I agree, yeah. It'll be interesting. Maybe he'll work his way into the team, plays well in the VFL, but I didn't see any case based on... We're a finals contending team. If he's starting round one, he would start round one on a bottom four team, not on a team that has ambitions.
He does have strengths. He's quick.
Absolutely.
Moves well, but yeah, he just can't play on AFL standard big forwards, which is a problem. Yeah, at least, based on what we saw.
But he has time to get better. The Lennon, I don't think we learned anything new about him. His game actually wasn't that dissimilar to the St Kilda game where he was Seagull beautifully. I think there is an argument to make that Lennon is fittest and fastest when running into an open goal.
he really covered ground on that third goal. It was quite impressive.
Yeah, but I don't think that really we learned anything new.
No, not particularly. What about Ollie Markov?
Good in the first game, yeah. I mean,
good.
Exciting.
Hardly played in the second, but he didn't look completely out of place, which for somebody who was primarily an SANFL reserves player last year, that's an achievement.
Yeah, I was a bit annoyed. One of the commentators was cut off halfway through an anecdote about how well he played in the preseason game, because, you know, that would be actually a helpful thing that insiders have knowledge of that, you know, perhaps could be put on a website. He looked good enough and looks like he might play senior footy this year. I was just going to bring up Edwards. They talked about playing him more forward this year. That's fine, and he is a very good forward, but that's what the commentator said. But he's also an elite clearance player, and he sets up an awful lot of goals playing in midfield. So if the coaches want to play him in midfield, that's all right by me. Unless you have anything to add to that.
Oh, no, I'm just completely fine with more of pre-injury Shane Edwards from last year, which was awesome.
Oh, he's an excellent player. Fantastic player to watch. Troy Chapman. Not as infuriating as Stevie Morris as a forward.
No.
Can kick off both feet, which is actually quite handy.
Can actually read the play occasionally.
Yeah, but and if the coaching staff had any credit with me in this issue, I would say, well, it's probably a clever thing to do because it sets up throwing him forward three times in the regular season. But after enduring months and months of the Stevie Morris experiment long after it should have been killed, I am nervous now we're going to line up with Troy Chapman forward in round one. Because one thing about the prospectus showed is, despite his abysmal final, he's actually not a bad defender.
I know. There's all sorts of conspiracy theories. I mean, one is that their preference is to for Dave Asprey to take his spot as the other key back and sort of have him see if he's functional in a utility role. So, given Ty Vickery and Griffith's struggle staying healthy, I can see the need for, you know, at least see what you've got with Troy Chapman forward. But, you know, if in 12 months' time we can pretend this conversation never happened, that would be ideal.
The opportunity cost here, and if it is just to throw Troy forward, that's fine. Occasionally. The opportunity cost here is development time. It's not going into Nick Bing. We'll see what the cost of that is in the long term. But
I know. I'm quite freaked out about how Chole has leaped ahead of McBean on the pecking list. I mean, I do get that he's probably a better ruckman, but yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not completely convinced that the and when the coaching staff talk about need to score more, they talk more about the need to generate turnovers. Now, it is true that turnovers lead to scores in AFL, but, you know, often attacking dysfunction leads to turnovers because players try crazy things to try to manufacture goals, or their players aren't getting separation, which is why, you know, the North Melbourne game, as you can see in the prospectus, the first one where we lost in Tassie, we had a huge amount of scores off turnovers. But, you know, having watched that game, I think part of the reason was that our forward line was completely dysfunctional and we had no one to kick to. So Dusty did dumb things in a desperate bid to manufacture goals. But I digress. As I think your core point of, if Chaplin, I'm hoping we're not debating Troy Chaplin as a forward for much longer.
No. Was there anyone else you wanted to raise from the two games?
Just a quick nod of the hat to Sean Grigg that, you know, in the first game when he was given sort of first mid duties, he was respectable, showed why he is a solid sort of second-tier AFL player.
Hmm. I thought Sammy Lloyd looked the fittest he's been. He still doesn't look quick, but, you know, he was moving pretty well.
There's been some preseason hype about him. Apparently he's been good in a few practice games, according to a few online reports. So I was almost, I've got big hopes for Sammy. I hope he plays in the third game. He didn't quite live up to them in the first game, but I had my expectations set quite high. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's always but tough he, being he played, being a forward in a team that's being flogged.
He's decent too. So let's hope he gets a bit of game time and uses his opportunity in the third game.
Hmm. All right. Well, actually, speaking of which, do you want to talk a little bit about our favourite annual publication, the AFL Prospectus, and what it says about Richmond?
Yeah. So what stood out to you?
Well, you know, there are a few obvious ones, you know, that Lids is awesome, Chimp struggles with taggers. Troy Chaplin came out surprisingly well as one of the best one-on-one players in the AFL that I was a little bit surprised by.
Yeah, exactly. As I said, despite a disastrous final, sort of all the, if you'd asked me in round 22 what kind of season Troy Chaplin's had, I would have said pretty good. And turns out he did actually have a decent season.
I know. For a completely random fact, we can award the Richmond Recruiters the Leyland Brothers Award because this year Richmond is the only club in the AFL to have a player from every state and territory in Australia.
There you go. So there was a few stats. The opening analysis was about how much our game plan changed after that infamous North Melbourne game in Tassie where we gave up all those points in turnover and how we became much more conservative with ball use. Nice to have that confirmed. It would be nice if the coaching staff didn't deny that there was any shift at all after that point because there clearly was. But, you know, I mean, what do you expect? Coaching staff don't have to give away their tactical innovation. It's not really an important issue that they sort of denied that there was a shift afterwards. But, you know, it's nice to have it confirmed. A few other things, sort of nothing will surprise people about mid-table on, you know, age, experience and games played. There's the same old issue. We don't score enough. We knew that. We and we did know this, that we had the third most difficult draw, but this is something I wanted to raise, Nick, that we're one of the biggest winners from the Essendon suspension, because we had two games against Essendon and two games against Port. So that's probably...
Very much so.
You know, effectively dragged our draw more to sort of the middle of the pack in terms of difficulty.
Yeah, towards middle of the pack. You know, Port Adelaide is still a decent side, but yeah, it's very much limits their upside, losing both Monfries and Ryder.
And importantly, also Essendon and Port were probably rivals for us for those, you know, bottom four slots. If Watson had got fit again this year, you know, Essendon would have been a decent team. So, you know, it helps us both in our direct head to head games, but also in our competition for the top eight.
I think Essendon is a while away. Some of the other things from the prospectus, it is always good when the stats sort of confirm your sort of general impression of things, but it was just how well-rounded a defensive team we were last year, that we were good defending one-on-ones, we were good defending at ground level, we didn't concede many shots from, you know, good places on the ground, and we were pretty good at disrupting how other teams moved the ball. So, it was, you know, the defensive reputation was well-earned.
Indeed. I mean, part of that is that we play good ball control, so we have very high possession, time and possession stats since the North game. There's a flip to that, is that, you know, we don't score as much because our ball movement is partially designed as a defensive movement. Mm. But, you know, there are swings and roundabouts to it. And clearly, I think the recruitment of Yaron is an attempt to get more attacking, because he's clearly, his best strength is disposal off half back.
And transitioning quickly. Yeah, that, you know, when you look at what we do well, we're very good marking inside 50, thanks to Jack and Ty, although not Ben Griffiths, who is a surprisingly disastrous one-on-one mark.
So the big thing was Ty comes out quite well, and Griffo comes out quite badly. You know, not a huge shock after the year, but I was surprised to the extent of it. You know, he was 15th for goals. Ty was 15th for goals amongst key forwards, so he's effectively, he's one of the best. He should be a first-string AFL key forward, technically. Also, you know, obviously, the subtraction of Jack helps. But, you know, his hit-out to advantage rate is very high. He's not so good at winning hit-outs, but he's good. His tap work is actually quite good. Things I didn't know. So, yeah, I was kind of impressed by that. Whereas, as you pointed out, Griffo's numbers weren't good at all.
No, and we mentioned before, but our forward line really wasn't very good in the other than Ty. We were very good when Ty or Jack was taking a mark and having a shot, but everything else pretty much was a crapshoot. You know, Dusty still kicks a lot of goals for a midfielder. Lids has a great season, but yeah, the rest of the team's pretty weak. And actually, thing that the prospectus highlighted was that sort of players 1 through 16 in our team were very good, but players 17 through 22, much less so.
Yeah, they did highlight that, but two of those players were Grimes and Batchelor, and then two players we have chosen to treat as sort of undroppable almost.
Taylor Hunt as well, and I thought Taylor Hunt was pretty good defensively on small forwards.
But the numbers didn't quite support that.
No, which is funny. I mean, for me, he's still clearly ahead of Stevie Morris for that position.
Yeah, but his disposal doesn't come out too well either. But yeah, I would agree with you. My eye test was with you. Something I wanted to point out, Brandon Ellis, who got a bit slated in the commentary a bit for bad disposal, is actually above average for not as good as he was the year before, but he recorded an average kick rating last year, considering how much outside he is. So, I think he was maybe slightly unfairly potted. I mean, obviously,
his kicking for goals was off last year, but yeah, he He's an easy guy to take for granted. The second of my fun random facts is that we have the second most top 20 draft picks of any club now, with 18. Now, GWS have 24, and Carlton have 16, having just recruited a bunch of GWS high draft pick cast-offs. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, a few other points. Alex Rance was rated one of the best in his position for kick use, again, despite what the commentators consistently repeat that cliche that he's not good at that. Yeah.
Well, he wasn't at one stage, but no, he is now.
It's time to move on from that, if you're a commentator. But you're right, he was once. But labels are Anthony Miles, an absolutely elite inside player.
I know. The difference with having him in the team this week, I mean, there were a lot of guys that came back, but yeah, love him. He's great. Yeah. So I think he's physically he looks a bit better as well.
But you know, just we're negative in clearances when he's not in the clearance, and significantly positive when he is. Cameron McIntosh doesn't get enough pressure, which actually surprised me because I thought he was quite good at that kind of off the ball thing, but. I guess maybe in his case, he's had a few more high-profile ones rather than, what he did to Daisy Thomas and things like that. So they sort of stood in the line more than his actual full statistical output. But, you know, all in all, again, absolutely quality bit of work. Nothing mind-blowing. But I think...
Of the VFL guys, we've... talked about it before, but Jason Castagna really stood out. Elite ball winner, covered a lot of ground, intercepted opposition kicks, was good spoiling. Like he had a good season last year. I was a little bit sad he didn't get a bit more game time against Freo because he was frisky when he played.
Yeah, fair point. And Lee McBean has kicked the most goals in the VFL over the last 3 years.
I know.
So that's it. That's it for me from the prospectus, but great read. Highly recommend that people go out and buy it. Or very informative about other clubs too. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about, Nick?
Well, we've got Thursday week's the next game before heading towards round one. So we'll do another show after the Port Adelaide game. But I just wanted to mention quickly how much I'm intrigued by, although it could go disastrously badly since it's the AFL and the AFL have never heard of something called unintended consequences, but this introduction of recruiting zones for Victorian clubs for players from a sort of international, non-traditional background. So the idea being that if clubs get... guys from sort of, you know, first generation migrants who are currently outside of the normal junior football path. You know, if you've got, say, a Sudanese basketball player and you get him to swap over to AFL at 15, you'd get first crack at him when he's 18. And we've been allocated as a geographic zone pretty much the whole of northern Victoria, including our old recruiting area around Mildura, which makes me happy because I work with somebody from Mildura, and yeah, there's a ton of Richmond supporters up there.
What about Sudanese people?
There are some actually.
I don't mean to be cynical about this, but you know, clearly the system's rigged to zone that the more Sudanese you have in the zone, the better.
that is very much the case. Although, without going into too much detail, Australia's migration rules do make it easier for you to immigrate if you're prepared to go and live somewhere in regional Australia rather than in Sydney or Melbourne. So I know there's a lot more Sudanese living in Tasmania than there used to be, and wouldn't surprise me if Northern Victoria had a few too.
Oh, well, certainly interesting. I completely agree with your comment about unintended consequences. For instance, I do love how the AFL cracks down on scalping every year because in America you had secondary ticket markets. Members for years now have been able to sell their tickets, and it's a fantastic thing for fans. They can go and see the games they want, and members who made a huge investment and can't make a game can actually get some of their money back. So the only people that are disadvantaged by this are, you know, it's actually great for fans. And all it does is stop the AFL selling a few extra tickets, but they can make money exchanging. Lots of clubs do it even when they don't sell out in America, but we can't do it in Australia because apparently capitalism is only good when big businesses are making profit, not when small people are, you know.
I know, and it's not like the Western... I know, and the Western Sydney Wanderers do it already, and I think possibly even the Melbourne... Victory as well. It's the technology is all there.
Can we stop sending? If one more AFL person goes over to, they can watch the bloody Super Bowl show from Australia. If they really want to learn about US sports, learn how they did expansion markets, learn how they did free agency, learn how they do secondary ticket markets, because that's what makes US sport great and why people follow it all around the world. Even, you know, if they didn't previously like basketball or NFL, it's not bloody. It's not halftime shows at the Super Bowl. Anyway,
we are at the ranty old man's yes. part of the show, so we should probably leave it there.
Indeed. I'm Andy.
I'm Nick.
We're Richmond Tigers. Anywhere that you can see us, we can win.